Hey, what's up? It's Ben Greenfield, and today's podcast is all about ketosis.
Well, folks, you and I, or the average American at least, spend an average of 90% of time indoors, breathing around 30,000 gallons of air daily. According to the EPA, indoor air can be 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some cases, 100 times more polluted, especially like your home gym where you're breathing in even more air. This can be a serious issue. Data shows that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths around the world. So you need air purifying technology, and the one that I like as a standalone system that doesn't require you to go re-outfit your entire home's AC system or ducts is called the Air Doctor. The Air Doctor filters out dangerous contaminants and allergens like pollen, pet dander, dust mites, and mold, so your lungs don't need to. Their Ultra HEPA filter has been independently tested to remove 99.99% of tested bacteria and viruses and virtually 100% of particles as small as 0.003 microns. They also feature whisper jet fans, 30% quieter than normal ordinary air purifiers, and they are extremely affordable and accessible. Furthermore, they're going to give you up to 39% off of one of their extremely impressive and efficacious air filters, or up to $300 off today. Here's how you lock this in. You go to airdoctorpro.com/BenG. You can get one with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund, minus shipping, but you're going to love it. airdoctorpro.com/BenG. You'll get up to 39% off or up to $300 off. So lock it in today, folks. You'll enjoy it. Clean air is something everybody deserves. You can get it with the Air Doctor. All right, folks. Clinical research has shown that therapeutically and for overall health and well-being, the most critical time to ground is when you sleep. The electrons you absorb when grounding neutralizes free radical damage, squelches inflammation, restores healthy endocrine function, enhances cellular gating and circulation. That then improves the cellular uptake of nutrients and oxygen and hormones while maximizing the removal of cellular waste. And you can now ground when you sleep. This company called Ultimate Longevity makes indoor grounded sleeping devices, and they've done clinical research studies on grounding the human body for health. When you sleep on these mats, you get 6 to 8 hours of uninterrupted grounding, meaning I could travel, unroll it onto my hotel room bed, and fight all of the radiation, the inflammation I got from flying in the airplane right there during a full night of sleep. Full body grounding, which is what these mats give you versus just your feet on the ground, maximizes the electron transfer because the more surface area contact, the more beneficial the electrons, the more the results. So you get these amazing benefits, and inside your body, this stream of electrons works as an anti-inflammatory, pain-relieving, anti-aging, antioxidant boost, squelching inflammation all night long. They've got over 20 peer-reviewed research studies that have been published on the extensive health benefits of grounding. For vagal tone, serum electrolytes, thyroid function, blood glucose, blood viscosity, sleep, pain, stiffness, blood pressure, stress, even depression and anxiety. It's crazy. So you can go to ultimatelongevity.com/Ben to get your hands on these grounding mats. You can do mattress, pillow, blankets, a whole bunch of other valuable tools to help you bring your inflammation down and jumpstart your healing process. Again, it's ultimatelongevity.com/Ben.
In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show.
What they saw is that with fatty acid, you can yield 120 plus molecules of ATP, whereas glucose, which apparently, you know, it generates more heat when it burns, it's maximum 96.
You really trash your metabolism at a very young age. And to fix it, I think you have to sometimes really reach to quite drastic measures. And I think ketosis can be also a fix. It can be a metabolic fix that doesn't have to be ongoing for the rest of your life necessarily.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now. On the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey, folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and I've got a few paradoxical food ideas for you. Like, how about ketogenic pizza, or ketogenic toast, or ketogenic cornflakes? And yes, each of these and many of the carbalicious food items that you may associate with high carbohydrate intake actually do exist in a low-carb, high-fat, and relatively nutrient-dense form. You just have to know what to do. And you have to be willing to think outside the box of how how many ketogenic eaters operate, which is basically by drinking like copious amounts of full-fat coconut milk and buying avocados by the dozen and going through a stick of butter every couple of days or perhaps every single morning in your coffee. And the fact is that that's not necessarily what you have to do. It doesn't have to be like all avocados and coconut oil and sticks of butter everywhere. You can actually make really good food if you have the right tools on hand. And my guests on today's show just wrote this book that's called The Ketogenic Kitchen. And it's got like 250 recipes in it. But even more interesting to me, it also has some pretty comprehensive like scientific information for those of you nerds and geeks out there who want to kind of delve into the science behind why and how you make these type of foods. And it also is based on my own experimentation with the recipes in this book, written by people who actually know what they're doing in terms of making actual healthy food. That tastes good. High-fat, healthy food that tastes good. So this book was written by two people, both of whom are on today's show. The first is Dominie Kemp. Dominie, is it Dominie or Dominie?
It is. No, it's Dominie. You got it right.
Dominie. Boom. Dominie is an award-winning chef. She's a food writer, and she's an entrepreneur. And in 2013, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And she shifted her focus to a ketogenic diet. And as you've heard on this show before, that is one of the best ways to control the growth of cancer and also to prevent cancer is to limit the amount of glucose that you have available for mitochondria. She did that, and she wrote this book, which is actually her fifth cookbook. She also has a juice company, a Whole Foods cafe, and she knows a lot about healthy cooking and healthy eating. And her co-author is also on the show today, Patricia. What's up, Patricia?
Hi, Ben. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, and Patricia Daly, she's a nutritional therapist. She's an author who specializes in cancer care and the ketogenic diet. She's worked with hundreds of cancer patients in Ireland, and that's why you're going to hear her lolling Irish accent. She lectures at the Irish Institute of Nutrition and Health, and she's written quite a few books. One even that I kind of worked with her on a little bit, and it's called Practical Keto Plans for Endurance Athletes, and I'll link to that in the show notes, along with this other book, the book that we're going to talk about today, The Ketogenic Kitchen. And you can access the show notes for all this stuff that we talk about if you just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/ketokitchen. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/ketokitchen. So Patricia and Dominie, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Ben. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely to chat finally. Yeah, exactly.
now you kind of both have, and I don't know if this was awkward for y'all, but you kind of have like your own unique approach to eating. Like it seems like one of you is kind of like a little bit more liberal, one of you is, correct me if I'm wrong, like a little bit more strict. Like, can you go into the difference between your two different dietary approaches or philosophies?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head there. I suppose I took a more liberal approach to carbohydrates.
And wait, to interrupt real quick, this is Dominie speaking, right?
This is Dominie, sorry. Okay, gotcha. You'll notice, you'll hear Patricia's Swiss/Irish accent going, but yeah, this is Dominie here. So I took a more liberal approach to carbohydrates than Patricia does. So she would follow a ketogenic diet fully. I found low carb works for me, and I suppose trying to be a bit more sort of fat adapted. And I guess because I'm a chef and I work with food, I would find it hard to be in ketosis all the time. So for me, it's about sort of following low carb 80-90% of the time and then being a little bit flexible with that other 10%. And I suppose the book is in two halves. So my half was low carb and really trying to get people to get their head around embracing healthy fats, because for years, for 40 years, I would have followed the food pyramid and eaten a very low fat, high carb diet, which clearly didn't suit me. And it was really after getting breast cancer in 2013, for the second time, I had had a malignant melanoma in my 20s. And it was really at that point when I was in the oncology ward and handed a food pyramid leaflet and said, you know, this is what we advise you to eat. I just suddenly thought, you know what, there must be a better way. And that's when I started really researching and trying to find out what I should be eating going through treatment. And then I met Patricia, and after everything, we said, right, let's write the book we both wished we'd had access to when we were both diagnosed. And that was the start of a fantastic friendship and working relationship. And it's just been an incredibly interesting and fascinating journey that we're always learning and always trying to find out more. It's a really exciting time.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting how when you're laying out the fact that you, Dominique, are a little bit more kind of like liberal in terms of not doing like a strict carbohydrate restrictive approach, like you delve into, for example, a really interesting study back in 2012 where they took a bunch of overweight and obese young adults and they had them all eat the same number of calories, and one group got a low fat diet and one group got a low glycemic index diet and one got a low carbohydrate diet. And the low glycemic index diet and the low carbohydrate diet both saw some pretty significant benefits, you know, even though the low carbohydrate diet, I think, was like 10% carbohydrate and the low glycemic index was, I think, about 40% carbohydrate. You still saw some benefits from just being, you know, just freaking careful with blood sugar fluctuations, even if you're not doing like full on ketosis or something like that.
That's exactly right. And I found, you know, myself just over the last year or so, actually measuring my own blood glucose just occasionally to see what spikes it, what doesn't. Because again, the more you learn, the more you want to learn. And, you know, just seeing how everything from exercise and even sort of good carbohydrates, how you know, things like chickpeas or lentils or anything, how they can spike even a very small amount. And it's been really interesting to kind of see what works and what doesn't work. So, you know, I'm a chef and so I, you know, would eat carbohydrates if I could morning, noon and night, preferably slathered in fat and protein. So, you know, I find eating this way, it's terribly satisfying, but you do need to be clever and you do need to try and figure out ways around it. Because, you know, we exist in a world where carbohydrates are just in abundance everywhere you look. And so it's really trying to find ways of adapting and getting your family to sort of join in the quest, as it were, to just try and reduce down the amount of sugar we eat.
Right. And because I don't want to give people the impression that like, you know, I'm necessarily like anti-carbohydrate. I mean, even when you look at the Blue Zones, you know, you read a book like Dan Buettner's Blue Zones or a recent one I read by Dr. Daphne Miller called The Jungle Effect. Many of the long living populations and very healthy populations spread across the face of the planet, you see a pretty liberal amount of not just wild plant intake, which is a prevailing characteristic, but also the consumption of carbohydrates, but carbohydrates that are fiber rich and also very low glycemic index. Legumes, for example, you know, you look at Dan Buettner's Blue Zones, and like legumes are a huge part of many of the foods. And you look at like I believe they're called the Three Sisters in like, you know, Native American cuisine, you know, corn and squash and
exactly.
I'm totally blanking on what the last one is now. Is it beets, corn, squash and beets? Now I'm feeling like an idiot.
Maybe some other root.
But ultimately, they're low glycemic index carbohydrates. And when combined with the fact that the other characteristic of many of these blue zones is the fact that they engage in low level physical activity all day long, which also controls blood sugar levels. You know, I think that you can necessarily, you know, you can definitely make an argument that, you know, this idea of just simply paying attention to blood sugar regulation and not necessarily eating like strict ketosis is still going to give some pretty significant benefits from a longevity and blood sugar standpoint.
I think it's always also interesting to see where you start, because these people, that's how they grew up, and the kids, they probably never got any refined carbs, or they never got those, you know, junk foods that we basically, or I see a lot of kids in Ireland grow up with, and just really excess sugar. I mean, way above the WHO guidelines.
Yeah.
And so you really trash your metabolism at a very young age. And to fix it, I think you have to sometimes really reach to quite drastic measures. And I think ketosis can be also a fix. It can be a metabolic fix that doesn't have to be ongoing for the rest of your life necessarily. And we also see it. I mean, the ketogenic diet comes from the epileptic world. That's how it all started, and that's where we have the most evidence. And epileptic children, they quite often, they're kept on a ketogenic diet for 2 years and then they're weaned. So
yeah.
You know, it has to be a dynamic process, really. I think with carbs, that you can't just say, okay, I'm just going to stay at 12 grams of net carbs for the rest of my life. This is probably not going to work. And it's really looking at the individual, where they're at in terms of, as you said, you know, all the other lifestyle aspects and community and sleep and, you know, there's stress. Stress. That's so much that influences our blood glucose. I think for me at this stage now, you know, I've been keto now for, I started in 2012 and I was really strict at the beginning. And now I sort of start to realize there's other things that have an even bigger impact now on my glucose than food. So it seems that, you know, the body has sort of adapted, and but there's other stressors that I have to really keep an eye on, like sleep deprivation, stress, and feeling overwhelmed sometimes. You know, that can or fear, you know, fear of a relapse. Yeah. When I get sick, sometimes I do get, you know, scared, and that all influences then, you know, glucose and lots of other markers.
Yeah. And then Patricia, in contrast to Dominique, you're like a lot of your recipes in the book, because some of the recipes are like, you know, kind of like Dominique mentioned, more liberal. And then all of your recipes are like no more than like, I think like 5 to 10% carbohydrate intake, and involve, I guess, what would be considered like a little bit more of like a strict ketogenic approach. I suppose for someone who wanted more of that metabolic therapy, like who might have cancer or epilepsy or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's when it has to be really monitored, and where, you know, people have to really start weighing their food, at least initially, and just really learn as much as they can about quantities of food, you know, how much of what they can eat, and really learn a lot initially. It can be quite overwhelming for people. But yeah, as you say, I have meal plans actually in my part, because that's what I found when I was working with people. They said, oh, it's great to have recipes, but it's the magic comes when it's all being put together, and also using leftovers. And I'm a big fan of, you know, not wasting food. So I decided to do meal plans in my part of the book in the second part. And it starts with, I think, 48 grams of net carbs. Mm-hmm. And then over 2 weeks, it goes down to 12 grams, and then 2 weeks of 12 grams. And that's, you know, the 12 grams is, it's mainly, I think it's Tom Seyfried from Boston College who mainly came up with the 12 grams. And obviously that can be a bit dependent on the individual. But that's what we went for in the book as well, because it's very, very challenging to have only 12 grams of net carbs, but also have, you know, a lot of nutrient density. And that's really my focus. As you said, you know, at the beginning, I'm not one to recommend putting loads of butter into your coffee or just drinking olive oil. That's the questions I sometimes ask.
And, you know, how do you... a big glass of olive oil for breakfast.
Yeah,
actually. Yeah, that's so what tasty. I do.
So yeah. Functional. So what you're saying is that your definition of low carb, and it sounds like it's pretty close to my definition of low carb, would be like, I think in the book you say about 50 to 100 grams of carbohydrates per day, and then ketosis would be kind of closer to like that less than 50 grams-ish range. Mm.
Yeah, definitely. And I also have the experience with people that as they, once they're really adapted and they're sort of fat optimized or they're fat adapted, so which means it's not the same as being in ketosis. It means that your body preferentially uses fat as opposed to carbs. So even if the carbs are there, you know, it's only used when it really has to. So for instance, in exercise, but of otherwise, preferentially, fat is being the main source of fuel. And I do see with me as well, especially when I went increased my training load a little bit again, I could definitely tolerate more carbs and still be in ketosis.
Yeah. And you even mentioned this in the book, like you have a carbohydrate sensitivity quiz. And it's kind of like, I guess it'd be kind of similar to like, you know, Rob Wolf just wrote this new book called Wired to Eat that I interviewed him about, in which he gives all the instructions for getting a blood glucose monitor and just taking every meal that you eat and monitoring your blood sugar response to see your carbohydrate sensitivity. But you guys, you know, have a little bit more of like a, I guess, just like this really simple quiz approach where if you take this quiz and you have high carbohydrate sensitivity, you might be one of those people who would want to switch to, you know, using more of, I guess, like Patricia's recipes in the book or exactly. Doing more of the ketosis instead of the low carb until you can restore some of that insulin sensitivity and carbohydrate sensitivity.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was a wonderful quiz that we borrowed very generously from Dr. Georgia Eid that, for the book. I think it just gives a good overview as to whether people, as I said, you know, I would have definitely followed a high carb, low fat diet for years. And, you know, I think when you make the switch and you cut out carbohydrates and you look at fasting and all the benefits of that, and as Patricia talked about being fat adapted, I think it's amazing how, you know, before I would have eaten breakfast and then, you know, by 11 o'clock would be feeling that slump and tired and cranky and hungry and always thinking, you know, of the slump and my next meal. Whereas now, you know, to be able to go 24 hours and fast regularly, you know, you feel so much better. And, you know, I just think it's really interesting the way the body can adapt. And it just, you know, I think what we find is a lot of people, you know, it can be very, very divisive at the moment between, you know, low carb, ketosis, ketogenic diets, low fat, you know, everything has got very, very controversial. And I think what we find is that, you know, I keep saying there isn't the one perfect diet for everyone. It really depends on what suits you. And, you know, the two of us have written this book, but we both eat slightly differently. But the one thing we have in common is just really reducing carbohydrates. And if it suits and you do that quiz and you find out, you know, yes, probably carbs, a high carb diet doesn't suit you, I think it's such a great way to eat. And you can feel so good. And, you know, there are so many recipes in the book where I suppose we can replace things like pizza and so on and so forth and cornflakes, you know, as you touched on earlier, that you can still feel really, really satisfied. And I think, you know, you can't forget that eating has to be extremely pleasurable. It's such a wonderful thing to do, you know, socially, physically, you know, the whole lot. It's just an incredibly pleasurable thing. And I think, you know, for me as a chef, really important that all the recipes are really tasty, and I think that we've done that. At least I hope we have.
Yeah, I definitely want to get into some of your recipes, but I actually had a couple other questions, just a couple overview questions for you. One of the things you talk about that I thought was interesting that I haven't seen many people talk about much before is this idea that if you're eating too many calories and you're eating like a higher fat, lower carbohydrate, ketogenic diet, excessive calorie consumption on that diet seems to have some pretty significant consequences. Can you go into what happens if you're doing like let's say a ketogenic diet, but you're just eating like too many damn calories? Like what happens that is unique to eating too many calories on something like a ketogenic diet?
Yeah, it was basically, that goes back to a paper that was,
published in 2012. It was Tom Seyfried was one of the authors, and I think the lead scientist with Meidenbauer was his name. And they did show that on an unrestricted ketogenic diet, so when it was a mouse study, when they could feed as much as they wanted, they developed issues, especially with their lipid profile. I think the mainly triglycerides, they went up as well. And they sort of showed the signs of early heart disease as well. So I think it's hard to overeat on a ketogenic diet, but it's definitely possible. That's why we're talking about it. And also the other very interesting thing is, and I was I often talk with Alex Ferretti, a colleague of mine who is based in the UK. He more sort of specializes in athletic performance and ketogenic diet. So he did...
You mean Alessandro Ferretti, that guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I hung out with him. He was at, I think when I was in London at the Biohackers Conference in London, he was at that one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. So they're doing with Waco, I can't remember his last name. They're doing quite a bit of research into, you know, calories on a ketogenic diet. And what they realized is that if you, and now it's getting a bit nerdy, but if you take the 18 carbons of a you know, fatty acid, so an 18 carbon fatty acid, and you compare that with three molecules of glucose, which also then has it's a 6 carbon molecule, so 3 times 6 is 18 as well, so that you can compare it. And what they saw is that with the fatty acid you can yield 120 plus ATP molecules of ATP, whereas glucose, which it generates more heat when it burns, it's maximum 96. So we also see there that it's actually a more effective, more efficient way of generating energy, and that's why you probably have to reduce your calorie intake so that you can really compare a ketogenic diet with you know, a normal standard diet, especially in trials. I think that's one of the downfalls of some trials as well. And that has never really been explored that way. But if you want to really be genuinely isocaloric, so if you want to compare two diets, and the ketogenic diet is one of them, you probably have to go down on the calories. And so that's, you know, I see that all the time as well, because it can be hard to actually really eat all the calories. Your appetite changes, definitely. Mm. And not in a negative way. It's just you don't actually feel the need to eat all the time.
Yeah. So that's actually like when you bring up some of the issues with the labs, like I see that a lot of times with folks who are, I guess you see it more with athletes who are eating a ketogenic diet. You actually see things like really elevated blood glucose and like high LDL and low HDL with high triglycerides. And a lot of these issues that I think come from just like doing the ketosis thing, but just like eating too much, like just too much food. Like not that the other issue isn't a problem too, you know, people starving themselves into things like amenorrhea and, you know, low thyroid and low testosterone. But yeah, I mean, you can't just like switch to ketosis and just like stuff face with copious amounts of oil in your coffee and assume you're going to be good to go. It's a good point that you're making there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think nutrients as well. I mean, so many people still haven't copped on that you really need to get your nutrients in. If you can tolerate vegetables, please eat your vegetables. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I know of people who can't, you know, they have a salicylate allergy, or for whatever reason, they just do not tolerate vegetables. Yeah. And that's okay. But if you do tolerate them, please eat them.
Yeah. There's actually a really, really, really good new book about that, about why a lot of people don't tolerate vegetables and what you can do about that. It's called The Plant Paradox by Dr. Stephen Gundry. It's actually a really good book. For those of you listening, I'll link to anything I mentioned. If you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/keto kitchen, I'll put that one in there. But you guys also, one other thing you mentioned that I was kind of curious about, because I haven't seen this much, is you're actually recommending that, especially like cancer patients, steer away from whey protein. Why is it that would be the case?
Well, it depends a little bit. And interestingly, I was talking about this. I was at the conference in Florida, in Tampa, in February, the Metabolic Therapeutics Conference. And I was talking to Andrew Kutnick, who specializes in cachexia, so rapid weight loss in cancer patients.
Right.
And so it's a very, very tricky condition. Nobody really knows what to do about it. There's no drugs that can stop it. There's a few things we can do, but in terms of the pharma companies basically are, just pulling their hair out because they can't find what exactly is going on. So it's definitely a lot to do with metabolism. No doubt. And I sort of said, okay, would whey protein have a place there? And he said, they think so. So I think for somebody who is who needs that IGF-1 boost or insulin boost as well to put on weight, for instance, it can have its place in cancer patients. But again, I would really do that with somebody who understands exactly what they're doing. And otherwise, and as I just mentioned, it's mainly the IGF-1 or insulin spike that whey protein can elicit. So that's the main reason.
Okay, gotcha. So, I mean, it's really good, though, because of that. People I'm helping put on muscle or gain weight, like I'm a huge fan of whey protein, but you're just saying,
yeah.
You're okay, so it's the insulin and the insulin-like growth factor spike that is the reason you're not a fan of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Got
because
it.
It's one of the pathways that can be used for cancer proliferation.
In which case, I'm assuming you would recommend if someone was going to use a protein like a pea or a hemp protein or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Hemp is sort of my preferred. Or there's some mixtures as well, hemp and pea. So yeah, there's some nice ones out there. So I would go for the plant rather than whey or something else. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then also to get into like ingredients, you're also one of the sweeteners that you talk about in there. Of course, you mentioned stevia as being something that you utilize a lot in these recipes that I know we're going to take a dive into some of the tasty recipes here in a little bit. But you also talk about this special kind of syrup. Y-A-C-O-N, is it Yacon?
Yacon syrup, yeah.
Okay.
It's quite interesting because Dominie and I, we sort of, first of all, we didn't want to put desserts in there at all because we were sort of, what's the point? Because we actually want people to eat whole foods and to actually steer people away from sweets. So let's just ditch it. And then the publishers were, but you can't really write a cookbook without a section. And then also, in my experience, it can really be the make or break for certain patients. If they really have, in their view, nothing to look forward to when it comes to food, they just simply will not go there. And that's why for some people it's a crutch, and it's a very important crutch, and they need their sweets every now and then. And I do emphasize, please don't make that whatever white chocolate torte every single day. And it really is for special occasions. But yeah, the Yacon syrup, it was funny because some of my clients, they were sort of, oh, I can't have honey, I can't have maple syrup, I can't have agave syrup, so what is there left? And we're all about sort of giving people options. And I researched what is there left sort of in terms of, that nice liquidy sweetener. And obviously stevia is just drops. It doesn't have the same consistency as some lovely honey or maple syrup. So Yacon syrup is actually the closest, and it has a lot of fructooligosaccharides, which can be really beneficial for the gut and can feed some gut bacteria. I mean, some people do not respond well. So, but it's like, for instance, inulin as well, or, Jerusalem artichokes. It can be extremely beneficial for the gut if somebody tolerates it well. And also it seems to have some beneficial effects on metabolism.
Okay.
It's even been sort of, there's even a study into weight loss for and Yacon syrup. I think that's, I don't know why they did it.
You can just get like just pure raw Yacon syrup off of like Amazon, the same way that you would get like raw honey, for example.
Yeah. I mean, it's
available in the health food stores over here.
Yeah.
So I'm sure if it's available in Ireland, in the health food stores.
If you can get it in Ireland, you can probably find it in the US. Yeah.
Anywhere. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Although apparently the Guinness is a lot better over there.
Oh,
that's true. But, okay, let's start to delve into some of these recipes, because there's some unique things in here I wanted to ask you about. So first of all, you talk about toast in the book, like ketogenic toast. How the heck do you actually have toast or make toast on a ketogenic diet? Because like, we're huge toast fans at the Greenfield House. My wife makes sourdough bread all the time. It's definitely just like pure carbohydrates. It's not like a ketogenic. But I'm curious, like how does one actually do ketogenic toast?
Well, there are actually, in fairness, there's some fantastic bread recipes in the book, and there's a lovely hazelnut bread, and there's a lovely coconut focaccia.
We've got time. Go into how you make it. I mean, you don't have to. Obviously, we want people to get the book, but at the same time, I mean, like, fill us in.
Yeah, I think the one that we call toast in, you know, sort of in quotes, in inverted commas, that's the one that is made. It was mainly made with seeds, I think. So sunflower seeds. We're just trying to look it up here. I think it's at the beginning of my part, where, you know, you can. It is quite crunchy. You actually, there's quite a lot of cracker recipes, and they do come out pretty crunchy. But it's, I mean, that's why you put it into inverted commas.
Crackers, you're supposed to be crunchy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not sort of the nice moist part that your toast would have, but you know, it's pretty. It comes pretty close. So that's what we use. I have this recipe. I think it's with shiitake mushrooms and maybe eggs as well. And people just say, but what do I eat that with? So that's why.
Yeah, but how do you make the actual toast, like the bread or whatever, or the crackers? Like, what's the recipe to actually make these things?
There's one recipe for cracking crackers, and that's in my section. And actually, they're wonderful when you are craving, like, something to have with cheese or something like that. And they are bound with some psyllium husks. And again, a really good selection of seeds. And you bake them until they're really good and crisp. And what I always tell people to do is, because you sort of roll them out into a sheet. And once they start drying out on the outside, break those bits off and keep cooking them until they're really, really dry and crisp. And make sure you don't put them into an airtight container while they're still warm, otherwise they'll end up soggy.
But then they're like toast.
but they're fantastic. And people, you know, regardless of whether they're following low carb or not, they absolutely adore them. Patricia's a great one, the kale crackers.
That's what we call, what we sell as toast, basically. So
they're kale crackers?
It's kale, yeah. So it's kale, Brazil nuts, sunflower seeds, and then you bind all this with eggs, and you put some onion as well, and a little bit of coconut oil, and then just spices and salt. And so depending on if you make them for kids or for adults, you can vary the spices a little bit. But I actually made them for the school recently. I went into my 5-year-old's school, and the kids just love making those crackers because it's all handiwork, and they can just I prepared everything at home. And they're basically like builders, just putting the dough down and just making it as thin as possible. And then you just put it in the oven, and you make sure, as somebody said, you just, you know, sort of take off the on the edges initially when it's really nice and crisp. And then the middle sometimes takes a bit longer. But they're really lovely. And most kids just, you know, in the school, they absolutely adored them. And moms told me they're making them at home now, especially because you can involve the kids.
Yeah.
So that's kale crackers, for instance, and then we've got some other recipes. We've got about 3 or 4 different cracker recipes, and then bread as well. And they're all, they are mainly, you know, there's vegetables, quite a bit of vegetables in them, and then, or nuts and seeds as well.
Okay.
All right, folks, clinical research has shown that therapeutically and for overall health and well-being, the most critical time to ground is when you sleep. The electrons you absorb when grounding neutralizes free radical damage, squelches inflammation, restores healthy endocrine function, enhances cellular gating and circulation. That then improves the cellular uptake of nutrients and oxygen and hormones while maximizing the removal of cellular waste. And you can now ground when you sleep. This company called Ultimate Longevity makes indoor grounded sleeping devices, and they've done clinical research studies on grounding the human body for health. When you sleep on these mats, you get 6 to 8 hours of uninterrupted grounding, meaning I could travel, unroll it onto my hotel room bed, and fight all of the radiation, the inflammation I got from flying in the airplane right there during a full night of sleep. Full body grounding, which is what these mats give you versus just your feet on the ground, maximizes the electron transfer because the more surface area contact, the more beneficial the electrons, the more the results. So you get these amazing benefits, and inside your body, this stream of electrons works as an anti-inflammatory, pain-relieving, anti-aging, antioxidant boost, squelching inflammation all night long. They've got over 20 peer-reviewed research studies that have been published on the extensive health benefits of grounding. For vagal tone, serum electrolytes, thyroid function, blood glucose, blood viscosity, sleep, pain, stiffness, blood pressure, stress, even depression and anxiety. It's crazy. So you can go to ultimatelongevity.com/Ben to get your hands on these grounding mats. You can do mattress, pillow, blankets, a whole bunch of other valuable tools to help you bring your inflammation down and jumpstart your healing process. Again, it's ultimatelongevity.com/Ben. Well, folks, you and I, or the average American at least, spend an average of 90% of time indoors, breathing around 30,000 gallons of air daily. According to the EPA, indoor air can be 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some cases, 100 times more polluted, especially like your home gym where you're breathing in even more air. This can be a serious issue. Data shows that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths around the world. So you need air purifying technology, and the one that I like as a standalone system that doesn't require you to go re-outfit your entire home's AC system or ducts is called the Air Doctor. The Air Doctor filters out dangerous contaminants and allergens like pollen, pet dander, dust mites, and mold, so your lungs don't need to. Their Ultra HEPA filter has been independently tested to remove 99.99% of tested bacteria and viruses and virtually 100% of particles as small as 0.003 microns. They also feature whisper jet fans, 30% quieter than normal ordinary air purifiers, and they are extremely affordable and accessible. Furthermore, they're going to give you up to 39% off of one of their extremely impressive and efficacious air filters, or up to $300 off today. Here's how you lock this in. You go to airdoctorpro.com/BenG. You can get one with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund, minus shipping, but you're going to love it. airdoctorpro.com/BenG. You'll get up to 39% off, or up to $300 off. So lock it in today, folks. You'll enjoy it. Clean air is something everybody deserves. You can get it with the Air Doctor.
And do you do, like instead of crackers, do you do any actual, like breads at all? Or is it pretty much impossible to have, like an actual high-fat, low-carb bread?
No, it is. There's a hazelnut bread, and you can make it with any type of nuts. I actually had somebody email me, hazelnuts are so expensive at the moment. Can I take anything else? You can use almond butter or cashew butter or whatever. Obviously, the carb content will vary a little bit, but it's lovely. Totally looks like a bread. It's got the texture of a bread, and with a bit of butter, for instance, it's lovely. And for my kids, I just then put, you know, something sweet on top or whatever. So it is a family-friendly bread. And then we've got muffins as well, you know, with coconut flour is very handy for muffins and breads as well. So I usually use those. And
yeah, the vegetable muffins are fantastic because you can also do them in a loaf, and it's just a load of carrot, spinach, red onions, courgette, or what you would call zucchini, and garlic, and then a lot of melted butter, which just gives it just such great flavor, and some coconut milk and a lot of egg. And it's almost like a cross between a sort of quiche / muffin. But these are wonderful, and you could do it in a whole loaf and do slices of it. So again, it's like, you know, I think as Patricia was referring to earlier about us being reluctant to put in desserts and sweet things. You know, I think it's great, though, to have things like this, especially for vessels, you know, for things like butter or cheese or something, or, you know, different dips, lovely pesto dips and so on that we have. And those are the things sometimes you really miss when you are eating low carb, you know.
as you were talking about your wife making sourdough, I'd eat sourdough morning, noon and night if I could. I absolutely adore it. But that's, it's one of those things that you really miss. And I think if you have good replacements like that, that are low carb, it just really can kind of help you stay on track.
Okay. What about cereal? Because I kind of like quit eating cereal for a really long time. I used to actually make oatmeal every morning, and my oatmeal mm-hmm. recipe was just like steel cut oats and water. And then I put as much, speak of the devil, whey protein in there as possible. And then like three scoops of peanut butter and some cinnamon. And I'd microwave that for about 4 minutes until it like basically made like a cookie in a giant bowl. And that was like my breakfast for probably like 3 years back when I used to race a lot of triathlon. Like that's just like what I ate every morning. And now I have like a plant-based kind of like high fat smoothie, but I do like cereal. I grew up eating Captain Crunch, of course, peanut butter Captain Crunch. And you actually have like a cereal recipe in the book. I think it's like a cornflake recipe or something like that, but can you go into how one would actually do cereal?
Well, we have cornflakes and then also granola. The granola is lovely too.
It's so delicious. Yeah, that granola is amazing.
The keto cornflakes, it's basically coconut flakes, which I think are brilliant also, you know, even for snacks, or they are very satisfying. And then also some flaked almonds and then cinnamon. And then we have, it's a protein coconut shake, basically, because it would be quite low in protein. So the coconut shake is then with, we have Sun Warrior using here, or I like Nucest as well, with coconut milk or almond milk or, you know, whatever people like. And so that goes on top then.
Okay, so it's just like basically coconut flakes and then like nuts, like almonds, and then you kind of like cover coconut milk or whatever, you throw some cinnamon in there, and there's pretty much like no grains or no, it's like just like a bunch of crunchy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'd throw in there if it were me is I would throw, because they are kind of high fat and they're really crunchy and they taste great. I would throw cacao nibs in there.
Yeah, that'd be great too.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Maybe in book number two. You can pay me royalty on that recipe.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, I've got another one that a lot of people kind of like quit eating when they quit eating, you know, a high carb diet, and that would be pizza. How do you do pizza? How do you do like a low carbohydrate pizza, especially when it comes to the crust?
Yeah, well, this is when we have two different types of pizza. We have one vegetarian one, which is a cauliflower base, and my sister-in-law, she's a chef over in New York, and for years she was vegan and raw food enthusiast. She wrote a fantastic book with Talia Rose, and so she gave me the recipe for this cauliflower pizza, and it's brilliant. You just blitz a raw cauliflower until it becomes sort of breadcrumb like, and then you bind it with some soft goat cheese and egg, and then you spread it out. And you blind bake it. So you bake it in the oven until it dries out a bit and it forms this wonderful base. And then you can top it with a really simple tomato sauce that you make, you know, sauteing off some onions, adding some tomatoes and red pepper, a load of thyme and some garlic, and then making some courgette ribbons and topping it with a little goat's cheese and a little drizzle of olive oil. And that's a fantastic, really nice vegetarian kind of pizza that is also really good the next day cold. But the other pizza that we have is a meat pizza. And this is one of Patricia's recipes. And
I got a lot of slagging for you. Dominie was this is, you can't possibly put this in your book.
I was horrified. Disgusting. I was absolutely horrified when I read it. And I tease her, I say it's like her Homer Simpson pizza, because it's the base is made with ground or minced lamb or beef, and you mix it with some whole grain mustard and herbs and so on, and you just flatten it out and you bake it, and then we top it with a lovely sauteed mixture of spinach and mushrooms, and then some artichoke hearts and a little parmesan or manchego pizza. We also put it sort of instead of the tomato sauce, this lovely hemp and sun-dried tomato pesto that we have a recipe for. And when we finished writing the book, we were shooting some videos And we made this pizza, and I swear, all the cameramen and the lighting guys just basically, they were in heaven. They were
Sounds
just eating
really
this
good.
Meat pizza, thinking, yeah, basically declaring their love for Patricia.
I need to give it to my wife because, like, you know, in addition to the flax and coconut focaccia bread, which you make with like milled flax seeds and coconut and chia seeds, it looks like your pizza base is just basically ground up almonds and ground up Brazil nuts and butter,
yes.
And you just basically mix. So what you do is
that's
you mix. Okay, you mix all that
that's
together.
I think that's
another one. That's like a kind of tart base, a sort of like a quiche.
Yeah. No, it's like the pizza base that you have in here is you mix.
Oh yeah, we have another
you mix,
one. Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
You mix almonds and you mix Brazil nuts. Then you add the egg and you add the water, and that's the dough. It's just like nuts and egg and water, and then you put that in the oil pan and you bake it. And it looks like you put coconut flour and salt in there too, and then you just bake that, and that's your base for the pizza.
Manchego pizza, I think. Yeah, exactly.
There's like no flour.
I mean, it's incredibly rich. So you know, if anybody says, "Oh well, I need to put on weight, what to eat," you know, that could be the one. But I think it's a nutty pizza.
Nutty pizza base.
And that's a really nice one as well. And I always sort of I think that freezes really well, that pizza base. So I always check, does it freeze or not? Because I like to make double the amount. And that's a really nice one too.
Yes, it's three pizza bases that we have in the book, which is not bad considering it's all low carb or ketogenic. It's a pretty good strike rate.
I know. I love reading books like this and then going in the kitchen, figure out how to put it. Because my wife has a pantry full of every single like flour and like coconut and banana or breadfruit and almond flour. And she has all this stuff because she cooks a lot more than I do. But I like to go in and tinker when I read books like this and see what I can make in the process. My boys and I both. You also have something in there, speaking of tinkering with new recipes, called tamaki, T-E-M-A-K-I. I'd never really heard of tamaki. What is that? And then what's the recipe and why is this included in there? Because it looks really simple, but I wanted to ask you about it.
Yeah, it's sort of inspired by Japanese. I love sushi and Japanese food, and they generally fill it with lots of rice. So, you know, it would be a typical tamaki recipe. It's the nori seaweed that is on the outer. So you usually use it as a wrap. So the seaweed is your wrap,
right?
And it actually looks like a thin wrap. And so traditionally they would put lots of, you know, rice and avocado and fish and different things that wouldn't be very keto friendly. But what we did is we put, you can pretty much put anything, but we have roast chicken and then spinach and pesto. So Japanese people probably pull their hair out. But But it's just a really quick lunch. I always have pesto in the fridge. That's just always a given. And we have several pesto recipes in the book. Mm-hmm. And most people have a bit of spinach as well. And so it's really sort of a leftover recipe where you can just use your imagination and just take the seaweed and stuff it with whatever you want. And we just give a bit of inspiration there. And it could be a complete meal because we use a bit of coconut oil to fry the chicken, leftover chicken and spinach.
It's basically, you know, in looking over it, because it's like a meat, and usually what I use is sardines for lunch. But I'll just take sardines with a few vegetables, and I wrap them up in seaweed. But I actually do use rice. I use a rice made from Japanese yam. It's no calories and it's no carbs. It's made by this company called Miracle Noodles. And so I I wrap that as my rice up in the seaweed wrap. And so I still get kind of like that filler in the seaweed. I'm getting hungry talking about it because it's almost lunchtime. I'm going to go up and make some after this. But yeah, I mean, that's how I get the rice component. Have you tried this before, these Japanese yam noodles?
Yeah, the shirataki. We actually have a recipe in there as well for shirataki noodles. Yeah, and you need to wash them really well, otherwise they smell like rotten eggs. So I always warn people when they open the package. But we have a recipe in there as well. We're just trying to find it, and it is shirataki. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's something like I always have the shirataki fettuccine and shirataki cappellini, shirataki spaghetti, shirataki rice. Like I have a whole box of it in my pantry that I'm constantly dipping into. My wife doesn't care for it too much, but like my boys don't mind it. And we even did like my boys last year at the Paleo FX conference actually taught a cooking class, and their cooking class was they made pad thai, but they actually used these shirataki noodles for the pad thai, and it was really good. They also used, instead of chicken, crickets of all things. So it was like a cricket shirataki noodle recipe. I have it set. Like if you go to Ben Greenfield Fitness, actually I'll link to it in the show notes. If anybody listening in wants my kids' pad thai recipe with the miracle noodles, I'll put it in there. And again, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/keto kitchen for any of this stuff. Let's talk about one of those things that I think is super popular, of course, among this whole like ketogenic low carb diet movement, and that's coffee. You have in the book a little bit of a discussion about coffee, and specifically the fact that you found a lot of your clients complain about nausea or bloating or a lack of appetite for a long time after consuming the traditional kind of like, I guess, bulletproof coffee recipe. And instead, hopefully Dave doesn't care about us saying this too much, you instead have your recipe for high fat coffee. What is high fat coffee?
Obviously, you know, Dave, you can't just take exactly his recipe, but it's such a big thing now. And what I like is, or what a lot of my clients like, is just to reduce dairy a little bit. So we just use different kinds of fat in this particular coffee. So I think Dave uses
MCT
butter, MCT oil, and does he use coconut oil? I don't even know.
Well, coconut oil or like C8, brain octane type of stuff.
We talk about, we talk about MCT. And I mean, I have to say, you know, most people, they're okay to tolerate his MCT, the brain octane. But any other ones, sometimes they can, you know, if they're probably more C10s than C8s, or, you know, whatever is in there, or it's not quite as pure, it can cause, in some very sensitive people, it can cause significant actually diarrhea or just cramps. So we were a bit careful not to, you know, just go gung-ho with that and just get everybody to use it without giving a bit of a caveat. So some people, obviously coconut oil is not the same as MCT oil. There's a lot of lauric acid as well. It's not pure, and other fatty acids. It's not pure MCT. You know, for some people it's enough, and we also use cocoa butter in there. But you know, it always depends a bit. Some people say, I find it really, really helpful to help elevate my ketones, and it doesn't insulin. So some people, they find it easier to actually ease into fasting that way, just by having a bulletproof coffee in the morning, because they couldn't just have nothing at all. And so for some people, I think it definitely has a place. It's really good. But again, you know, it's just liquid calories. So, you know, if somebody, say, has to lose a bit of weight, which actually, you know, is can be the case with some cancer patients, obviously not losing muscle or whatever, but you know, it certainly doesn't do any harm. I prefer that they actually eat food rather than, you know, eat calories in food form rather than drinking it, because it's very easy, as we discussed earlier, then to just go shoot overboard, especially if somebody is a bit of an emotional eater or coffee drinker.
So basically it's just like your hot coffee or your tea, and you're mixing it with coconut oil, with butter, and with cocoa butter. Those are like the three main components.
Yeah, exactly.
But we also have, there's a keto coffee as well, where make it with some actually tinned coconut milk and coconut oil and a little vanilla. So there's two different variations of it. And it's sort of one of those things. I think, it's like a lot of these things, they become fads, and people kind of go crazy for them. And then
you hear people, like, literally, as you said earlier, adding sticks of butter to the coffee and eating loads and everything. You're kind of going, you're missing the point. This is, you know, if you have just endless calories and endless amounts, you know, it's hard, and people do need to balance it. And I think it goes back to what Patricia is saying, like, trying to eat real food where the, you know, that it's really nutrient dense is probably a better way to go.
Yeah. Well, for those of you listening in, from no grain, nut, kale, and seed bread, which you have to try, to white chocolate, to banana ice cream, to a whole host of things you never would have thought that you could eat on a low-carb ketogenic diet, they're all in here, and it's a really well-done book with amazing pictures. So it's going to be over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/ketokitchen if you want to add this one to your pantry. I think it's a great addition. And Patricia and Domini, it was really nice to have your fantastic lolling Irish accents on the show today. And thank you for writing this book. It really is a great read. I thought when I got it, it was just going to be yet another cookbook, but it's actually got some really tasty, unique low-carb recipes in here. So nice job, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having us. It's been a pleasure talking to you. It really has.
Awesome. All right, folks. Well, I'm Ben Greenfield, along with Patricia and Domini, authors of The Ketogenic Kitchen. Check it out at bengreenfieldfitness.com/ketokitchen. Signing out. Have a healthy week.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.